We're just going to look at the wise men today, and really it's just a line, really. So I invite you to turn to Matthew 2. We're reading from verse 1 to 12. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the day of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him, and assembled all the chief priests and scribes of the people. He inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea. For so it is written by the prophet, 'And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word, that I too may come and worship him." After listening to the king, they went on their way, and behold, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. Then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way.
We're first introduced to the wise men as they headed to Jerusalem. And that's exactly where they expected the royal baby to be born. They expected him to be born in the capital city. They expected him to be born in a palace. Now, as they came into Jerusalem, you can well imagine that they came, I think in my head, in a kind of a caravan of camels, servants. And they would have caused quite a stir when they just went down the street and said, "Well, where is the one to be born king of the Jews? We have seen his star in the east and have come to follow him." They certainly would have caused quite a stir in the city of Jerusalem, and word got to Herod about that. Now, Herod, who is a despotic king, an evil man really, murdered people very easily, went and talked to his spiritual advisors, and as we have read earlier, they said, when we look at Micah, the Old Testament prophecy of Micah, chapter 5, we're told exactly where this child would be born. "For you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from of old, from ancient times." And this was all confirmed by the fact that the star guided them to Bethlehem and hovered over the house where Jesus was. Herod was less than honest when he said to the wise men, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." Herod and I had no intention of worshipping Jesus. His only intention was to murder him and his family. Now we need to ask ourselves the question as to what the wise men thought they were looking for. What do you think the wise men, as they came into Jerusalem, were thinking in their minds? Well, who were they looking for? So I've already mentioned they expected a child in a palace. They expected to meet someone in the purple, a royal figure. They expected someone who would be brought up with the best of tutors, learning various languages, being trained in military tactics and skills. They would have thought that this child would grow up to be a mighty king who would perhaps throw off the yoke of the Romans. They had seen his star ascend, and in their minds, they were thinking of a human being who would become a great human being, a political figure. That is what they had in their minds as they came into Jerusalem. Now, we read the story, but can you imagine how stunned they were when they came to the village of Bethlehem? Even Bethlehem today isn't even much of a town. In those days, it would have been a small village. It had an illustrious history because this is the town of David. But it's a pretty unimpressive place, and it was in those days. And then can you imagine the star hovering over a particular house in Bethlehem? Jesus has now moved out of the stable. I imagine Joseph and Mary are renting accommodation. They live in a house that would not be bigger than your lounge room. Now just imagine the wise men thinking, look, we expected someone born in a palace, but look, he's in a... The star is hovering over a small, insignificant village and over a particular house in the village. This king must be really born in humble circumstances. And yet we read this. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. They opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense and myrrh. You see, they came to Israel carrying gifts fit for a king, and yet the whole circumstances that they entered into, the humbleness, the humility of it, must have stunned them. Gold gifts for a king, a carpenter and his wife, and a child in a tiny house, a rented house, no doubt. Now, what I find amazing about the story is they didn't question their intuition. They weren't put off by the humbleness of Joseph and Mary's situation. They simply knew that they had discovered someone who would one day be king. Now this is what comes to my mind. As they return to the east, back to where they came from, they would have gone with a completely different impression of this king than the one they carried with them to Jerusalem, right? They left with a completely different mindset to the way that they came. It was a life-changing experience for them. I put it to you, they would have been shocked by a number of things. They would have been shocked by King Herod, who they thought was sincere when he said he wanted to worship with them, but God warned them in a dream that they should go another way and not go back to Herod because of Herod's murderous intent. They'd have been shocked by that. Shocked by the fact that already then, right at his birth, people were out for Jesus, out to kill Jesus. They would have been shocked by the general lack of interest in Jesus' birth. Jesus had, when they came into Jerusalem, Herod had got those wise men, those religious, astute scholars, who told him that Jesus was to be born in Bethlehem, the Messiah was to be born there, but nobody came with them to Bethlehem. They just travelled out again. Nothing had changed. A general lack of interest in Jesus or in his birth. And I've already mentioned that they would have been stunned by the humility that surrounded the humble circumstances. Putting it all together, their expectations would have changed. What they expected to see wasn't at all what they experienced. Everything turned on its head. Everything changed. The line I particularly find interesting is this one. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way. They departed to their own country by another way. I just want to pick up on that, you see. Because we know what it means. We know that for the safety of Jesus, they had to avoid Herod and travel back another way. And we're all pretty comfortable with that. We know exactly what's going on. But figuratively speaking, their minds changed, didn't they? They came to Bethlehem with one idea in their head. They left Bethlehem with an altogether other idea about Jesus. They came and they left. Things had changed for them forever. I was just thinking about the roads that we travel. Human beings, I think we could say, we're always on a road, aren't we? We're always going somewhere. When you meet someone for the first time, you might say, well, tell me about yourself. And they might start off when they were born, where they lived, their progress through life, their jobs, their schools, if they got married, if they had children, disappointments, sorrows, if you had time. You look at a person's life as a journey. And all of us, in that sense, are on a journey. We're on our way from our birth to the grave. I was just thinking about that star. The star changed everything for the wise men because the star shone and directed them to this small house where Jesus was. Do any of you know what the word asterisk means? Asterisk means? It means small star. I was thinking to myself that in our journey from birth to the grave, there has to be a little asterisk in our own lives. You know, when you read a paper and it's got a little asterisk there, small star, it always points to something on the bottom of the page, a footnote of sorts. Well, I believe that everyone has to have an asterisk in their life. A small star that says, this is when I met Jesus. This is when everything changed for me. This is when the road that I was on suddenly changed. My life was changed because I met with Jesus. In terms of our understanding of the Bible, we once were in fellowship with God. Then Adam and Eve sinned, our first parents, and we were exiled from the garden. We were put on a road away from God. But God, in his grace, sent Jesus so that the relationship could be restored. So we're all on a road, we're all on a journey. But is there an asterisk there for you, where you met Jesus and your life was completely changed because you did? Jesus said this to his disciples: enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. You're on a road, a journey through life. But if you come to that spot in your journey where you've met Jesus and you're now following another road, Jesus says of himself, I am the way, the truth, and the life. I found it interesting when you think about the way, the road, you have those images in your mind. We read this in Acts 9. Christians weren't called Christians from the beginning. They were called followers of the way. I'll just read that to you. Meanwhile, Saul was still breathing out murderous threats against the Lord's disciples. He went to the high priest and asked them for letters to the synagogue in Damascus, so that if he found any there who belonged to the way, whether men or women, he might take them as prisoners to Jerusalem. So again, now what road are you on? Have you met with Jesus? In the Gospels, there's a story of a rich young ruler. He came to meet Jesus. I'm just going to put that on the screen. A certain ruler asked him, "Good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "Why do you call me good?" Jesus answered, "No one is good except God alone. You know the commandments. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not murder. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony. Honour your father and mother." "All these I've kept since I was a boy," he said. When Jesus heard this, he said to him, "You still lack one thing. Sell everything you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come, follow me." When he heard this, he became very sad because he was very wealthy. When we think of that rich young ruler, he was a pretty good bloke. He was morally upright. But the sad thing about the story is, what? He took the same road back to where he came from, even though he felt a hole in his life. Even though he had no peace with God, he still took the same road back. He didn't change direction at all. Contrast that to the wonderful story of Ruth, who one day went to Bethlehem as well. Ruth's a great Old Testament story. Ruth's husband had died. He was from Bethlehem. All she had left was her mother-in-law. And when she left her country to go with Naomi, her mother-in-law, Naomi said, "Just go back. There's nothing for you in Bethlehem." And Ruth refused, and she said this, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me." She was on a road to Bethlehem, and she wasn't going to be diverted. A road back to God. Jesus talked about that wide and narrow road. Which road are you on? I wonder if you've ever had road envy. I've had road envy. I'm following the GPS unit in my car. This happened to me in Victoria not so long ago. But I've got old maps on my GPS, 5 or 6 years old. They haven't been updated. And I see the entrance to a freeway, but I'm just not sure about it because I'm following the GPS. And as you go on, you're taking the old road. say, down to Sorrento on the Mornington Peninsula. And every now and then you intersect with a freeway, but there's no entry to the freeway anymore because you missed the entrance. That's when I have my road envy, when you go, you know, it just irritates you to death as you see the freeway, you go underneath it, over the top of it, but you can't get onto it. Well, brothers and sisters, there's two roads. And for us who know Jesus, who have met with Jesus, the road has, there's purpose to life, there's direction in life. We don't walk alone. We know that we're right with God. And that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. That baby in a manger has changed everything for me, has changed everything for you, or could change everything for you. I'm just going to miss the next slide, Ben, so you can just leave that one. But recently, Marion and I were on holidays, and we were camping by a small lake called Lake Walker. Nobody's ever heard of it. You guys have never heard of it. Pretty small. It's sort of a therapeutic lake. It's water in the desert so people feel good because they can see some water, right? It's just a little lake. Mary and I camped on the side there. And then just up the road from us is some people in a caravan about 200 metres further. And the guy has a jet ski. Brand new jet ski. And twice a day, he'd get on his jet ski, throttle it up, do a few fishtails, I suppose you call them, and zoom around the lake, 15 minutes, max. And then he'd park it back at the caravan. The next day he would do it again. Perhaps he'd have a passenger. Sometimes he had a passenger. Zoom around the lake, 15 minutes on his $20,000 jet ski, and then park it at his caravan again. And I thought to myself at the time, and I said this to Marianne, you know, doesn't matter what your toy is, if you're just going around in circles, it gets really dull and boring. That's what I thought. $20,000, but just 3 minutes max, right, to get around that lake. That's the size of it. Even doing 50 kilometres an hour or whatever that guy was doing. Just round, round he went. And he got bored, so bored in fact, that he actually stopped at our campsite on one occasion just to have an impromptu chat. How's it going, mate? Good. Bored out of your brain? Yeah, no. I didn't say that. So it must be nice to have a $20,000 jet ski and go around in circles. I just say that for this reason. Now, I know a lot of people like going around and around in circles on Eastern Creek and so on. But usually there's someone timing it. There's a bit of fun, right? There's some purpose to it, Lord willing. What, I don't know, but I'm sure there is. But just going round and round in circles in life is a really empty existence, right? Really empty. And you can be on a treadmill kind of existence, on a road that's going nowhere because it keeps going round in circles. Christmases come and go, Christmases come and go, a new gift comes and goes. Jobs, health, sickness come, go. The writer of Ecclesiastes says it can be wearisome. But if you've come to Bethlehem and you've met Jesus, you're on an altogether different road. And that road has purpose. It has direction. And the most important thing is it has a destination. A destination. The Apostle Paul, and this is where I said to Ben, you can put that on the data projector again just as we finish. "I have fought the good fight," said the Apostle Paul. "I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have longed for his appearing." So we're on a road, having met Jesus, we're forgiven, we've been given a commission, we have a purpose, we have a direction, a destination. That's your life. You are so blessed if you know Jesus. And because you've met Jesus, you've gone an altogether different way with your life. The wise men came to Jesus with their own thoughts and what they expected to see, their expectations, and they left. Completely changed. I just can imagine them talking over and over and over about what they saw in Bethlehem. But if you haven't come to Bethlehem, if there's no asterisk in your life that says, "Here we met with Jesus, no little star," then you're on this treadmill thing. You're going round and round in circles. And that's a sad life. A purposeless existence is a sad life. But you've met Jesus. And this Christmas day, we remember that God's great plan for the world started off with him. So I just leave you with the questions and then I'll say amen. What road are you on? Which direction are you going? Is there an asterisk in your life, a star that has changed you? Have you joined the wise men and bowed down and worshipped this baby infant, now king? Amen.